He walked all over his own growing land, from the New York Island to the California sand. He saw all the people that needed to be seen, planted all the grass where they're needed.
Welcome to Here We Stand. It's September 2nd. I am your host, Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice, back in the saddle after taking August off. Well, I really didn't take it off. I was various places doing stuff that we'll hear about today and at other times. But it's great to be back live because we have today especially some fantastic guests. We know the system's coming down. We know that, take for example, what's happened in Ireland this last week. Internal discord in the Vatican threatening to topple yet another so-called Pope, Jorge Bergoglio, on the hot seat, even being denounced by his own archbishops as somebody who's engaged in covering up and doing more regarding child trafficking and rape in the so-called Catholic Church. Today we have with us three members of the ITCCS, the International Tribunal of Crimes of Church and State, in Dublin. Mary, Jean, and Trish, who've all been on the show before, they helped over the last couple of months convene a common law assembly in Dublin, which is in the process of establishing a grand jury, common law courts, and sheriffs to make the arrests against the known child rapists and traffickers. This is, for me, a symbol of what's happening all over the place, and we're going to get into that in the coming shows in September and October. We're going to have people live who are talking about these crimes, but especially in relation to these powerful institutions that have been trying to keep us down for so long. In this case, the Vatican, so-called Vatican. For new listeners, and I know there's a lot of you there because we've been getting so many hits on our website, itccs.org, that it's been, you might have noticed at the end of each month, it actually comes down because of the lack of bandwidth. Well, we're working on it, but that shows the increased interest in all of this. And here's another example, folks. In 1979, when the Pope went to Dublin, he got 2.5 million people in the audience. Last week, Jorge Bergoglio got about 100,000. That's a drop of 95%, folks. Yes, that's right. The crowd in Dublin this last week was 5% of the size it was in 1979. There were no protesters back in 79. This last week, there were more than 20,000 of them all over the country. Three different spots in Chum, where the mass grave of the children is, in Dublin, other spots in the north. And this is a sign of the times, the change that's happening. We're in the forefront of that. One of the reasons this is happening is because of 25 years of work by yours truly, other people, and then later the tribunal in Dublin in 2010, the ITCCS, which is leading this campaign all over the world now. And as part of that, we're going to be talking today about exactly what happened last week in Dublin with the three folks I mentioned and what it says about the way forward. What we're obviously seeing is that the criminals within the Vatican are falling out among themselves. Of course, these mutual finger pointings about who is the child rapist, now that they're condemning Bergoglio as well, this is part of a political struggle between the Ratzinger and the Bergoglio factions within the Vatican, definitely. The Archbishop Cardinal Vignagno, who has accused Bergoglio of covering up and protecting Archbishop McCarrick, a known child rapist, he himself is part of the old guard and was appointed by Ratzinger as the Papal Nuncio to America. So this is definitely representative of political struggle within the Vatican, but they all have to do it. They all are required by their own standing policy by Crimen Solicitanus to cover up child rape, protect the rapists. It's kind of like one lion accusing the others of eating gazelles. It's kind of absurd because they're all required to do it. They also don't see anything wrong with it, as is being evident whenever they do come to trial, their statements in court. It's astounding, the disregard they have for human life. So all of that is going to be talked about today. Okay, they're on the line. So let me just finish off this intro by reminding folks that we're also going to be talking about arrests that were attempted not only against the Pope, but in Canada, against Anglican Bishop Mark MacDonald. And this will be the subject, actually, of next week's show. So please turn into that. We're going to get into that in great detail. And also, I guess you could say the basis of our show here is you have to take personal responsibility, folks, for everything you know. That's how things change, not by relying on anybody else. And these folks in Dublin have kind of epitomized that for me. Three courageous women who are leading the fight. Let's bring them on now. Hi, folks. How are you?
Hi, Kevin.
Mary, Jean, and Trish. I love you guys. We're gonna get into a lot of stuff today, but first, I want to ask one of you to just jump in and describe a little bit of what happened this last week. There's been a lot of stuff in the news about Bergoglio coming to town. We know for a fact that there was a double impersonating him in Dublin because he was called to an emergency meeting of cardinals in Galway. Tell us a little bit of what went on, the size of the thing. Just give us some background.
It wasn't what they expected, I can tell you that.
We actually, the actual Pope appeared in Knock Shrine in Galway. But we had a clone in the park in Dublin.
Oh, yeah.
And the people didn't turn up. It was empty.
Why do you think that is, Mary? Tell us what that is.
Pardon?
Why did nobody show up, or very few people show up?
Because the people of Ireland have finally woken the fuck up.
Go on.
It's taken long enough, Kevin. My struggle has gone on 22 years, and you know that story. I have it wore out by now. 22 years ago, I pulled my son out of the Catholic school and I put him into an Anglican school. And the guy had 3 boys and 2 girls. And I was happy that he wasn't a paedophile and he was going to give my child a good education. Well, I followed them very carefully, Kevin, down through the years until I came upon you. And then when I found you on Facebook, I was like, oh, my God, I'm flying with their wings now. But like, Kevin, it's been a lot of struggle. But when you go down to the church in Dublin, like my local church would have been, the house beside my local church would have been the Bishop's Palace back in the day. And there's one man lives in that palace right now, a priest. But my point is, Kevin, people say to me, oh, my priest is good in my parish. Well, you're not good, Kevin. If you got told to zip it on child abuse, you're not allowed. No priest is allowed to speak out about child abuse. How can there be one good priest in the world if they cover abuse up?
Well, if they talk about it, they're excommunicated. It says that right in Vatican policy.
Yeah. That is their policy.
Basically, Kevin, I sent you a picture of when Pope John Paul came in the 70s.
79.
Compared to 2018, and basically there was crowds around Pope John Paul. And last week when Pope Francis arrived,
O'Connell Street was empty.
Apart from certain areas, like the middle of O'Connell Street and that, there was basically one line of people along the streets. Some streets were empty.
Right.
So people just boycotted it. I know for a fact that in the park there was a boycott and they were giving out tickets and people were getting tickets to beat the band with the intention of not turning up.
Yeah.
Right. Sounds like it worked.
Yeah.
Tell us about the protests. Tell us about the actual protests that happened. I hear they were in Sligo and Dublin and Chum. And, you know, a lot of this is about the Chum mass grave. I want to talk about that too, but some of the protests were about that.
Well, it's funny, Kevin. Actually, our main TV reporter, RTE, reported there was thousands and thousands at the protest. Far more than went to the park.
There was a protest here in Dublin up at the Garden of Remembrance, and I think 13,000 people turned up. It was a Say No to the Pope protest.
Wow.
And it was just like, compared to the people that turned up to the park, it was huge.
And all the banners.
Did you guys go to that protest?
Yeah, well, there's actually an occupation going on at the moment right beside it. And they actually had a protest as well where they put babies' shoes and that on the steps of the house. Mm. And it was basically separate the state and the church.
Right. But did that get a lot of press? Did it get a lot of exposure in the Irish media, the protests?
Yeah, huge.
I don't think it was done by RTE or anything.
No,
like
it
that.
Was. It was actually it was actually done by RTE. I was actually flabbergasted, Kevin, because I tuned into RTE, and they said there was thousands and there was thousands and thousands came out from the protest. They've never done that before.
So do you think it's because of the exposure of the whole Chum mass grave? And tell us a little bit about updates about the 796 remains that were found there. And we know that Jorge Bergoglio himself ordered Sean Brady, the cardinal, to cover it up. And then Brady stepped down soon after that. But has more come out about how they got there and especially the way the corpses were dismembered? Anything like that coming out?
Well, these were children that were actually used for vaccine testing
research.
And research. And basically, because they were given these vaccines, if it turned out wrong, they were actually just killed and thrown away.
Right.
They were actually put into incinerators.
Was it Sarah?
Yeah.
Now, I understand that one of the big pharma companies that were testing the vaccines, GlaxoSmithKline, they were the ones behind the big swine flu scare a few years ago. And they're in bed really closely with the Irish government and the Catholic Church. You know, we know they fund the church, and in return, the church provides them with kits for drug testing. Has that been talked about at all? Can you talk any more about that?
I'm not 100% sure about that, Kevin, but I think they've all been involved in polio vaccines and all that were given to the children of Ireland down through the years.
Yeah.
Like, we've a lot of research to do. But I'm 100% convinced. Me, a classic case where my son, who you know, we celebrated his birthday last weekend. And I was very ill after he was born, and they wanted to give me blood. And I said no. And the doctors were like, why not? Like, and I have this sixth sense that I said, no, blood is not good. And my brothers came in and they said, well, we'll give our blood because we were a match. But they said it would be too expensive to take their blood. So we need her to take the blood we're giving her. And my brother says, well, no, if she's going to protest, he said, I'm a chef. I'll take her home from hospital and I'll cook her high protein foods. Well, Kevin, it came out years later that I would have been one of the hepatitis B babies, B women. Because all the women of that year got hepatitis B. And the half of them are all dead now.
Right.
But I just had the sixth sense that kicked in. And I always had the same sense. I was born with the call. And I have this major sense when something's not right. And I won't take it.
I actually had to go for a hepatitis C test after I had my son.
Yeah.
He was born in 1992. And because he has a positive blood group and I'm rhesus negative, I had to get an MTD injection. And it was believed that in that time that the anti-D injection was contaminated for hepatitis C. So I had to go and get a hepatitis C test. Lucky enough, I was okay. Obviously, the batch that they gave me was fine. But so that's just some of the things that's gone on throughout the years.
But Kevin, just to give you a date when my son was born, he was born in 1988. And all the women that took blood of that year all got hepatitis B. And that was all down to the big pharma. Kevin, I actually believe they're putting this shit into the vaccines.
Yeah.
Ebola,
everything.
AIDS.
They're even trying to get kids injected with the hepatitis B vaccination in Ireland as well at the minute.
HPV,
when you look into the research and that, all the side effects that it actually has on people, and just like people are getting really sick and people are dying from these injections, and they're still administering them to our kids in Ireland, which they shouldn't be doing. The years ago, there was no hearing of injections when your kids were born, or there was no hearing of anything like that, and everyone seemed pretty fine and wasn't sick or anything until the big pharma started bringing in all these injections, hepatitis B and polio and HPV vaccinations, the whole lot. So,
yep.
I don't know. it just goes to prove that they are all working together in it, because they can even go through courts, and they can even get, if you refuse to have your kids tested, they go to courts and they get Section 47 granted through the district court for the court to hold, actually, for the court to actually say, well, your child is having the Hep B vaccination, whether you want it or not, which they can't force medication onto a child.
Well, you know, Trish, it's interesting how all of this stuff often leads back to Rome, because the Vatican Bank is a heavy investor in big pharma, in GlaxoSmithKline, in Novartis, all of these vaccination companies that are killing people. And has this been talked about? Is this an issue in Ireland?
Yeah, major.
Yeah, there's a lot of posts on Facebook, Kevin, about it. But I think Trish should explain her story.
Yeah, I had to go
about
to...
the children being...
Yeah, I definitely want to get to Trish. Is there anything else on that? And then we'll get Trish to talk about her, what's happened to her children.
Yeah, well, the religion was actually forced upon my children, two of my children, in the past year. I refused to let them have my two kids. I refused them their confirmation and their communion. I said I was deregistering them from the Catholic Church, that I didn't want a group of paedophiles perving over my children when they were making their communion or confirmation. And the social worker then went and she got a Section 47 granted from the court to actually force religion onto my children. I got talking to an inside woman that works in Tusla Child and Family Agency last week. And I said, is it right for you to be able to force religion on top of children? And she went, no. And I said, well, then why was religion forced on top of my kids? And why did the judge grant a Section 47 to force my kids to have their communion and confirmation met, as it's wrote in the Constitution that your religion is your choice?
Freedom of religion.
So she said that shouldn't have been done. So... again, I'm wondering why they actually are forcing kids into the Catholic religion. The kids shouldn't have to be forced into any of this. I don't want my kids involved in any of this. I don't want to be involved in any of this. And I got a knock at my door 3 days before the Pope comes to Ireland, and there's a priest and two nuns at looking for me to say a decade of the rosary with him. Seriously, like. The week the Pope is coming home, they're knocking my door. I asked, what are you doing knocking my door asking me to pray to some fucking paedophile for? Because I'm not doing it. I want nothing to do with Catholic Church. I want nothing to do with none of it. I said, who are you really praying to? What are you really doing? And they told me that I should pray for forgiveness. I said, if you're going to start praying for forgiveness, you're going to be there a very long time. Now just fuck away from my door and don't come near me, like.
Trish, did you say a nun and a cop? The clergy and the cop came?
A nun, two nuns and a priest.
Oh, I thought you said a cop too.
No, two nuns and a priest.
So how do they know about you? How do these clergy know about you?
Well, I spoke, Kevin, I'm after sending so many emails to the Vatican and the US Embassy. I'm actually blocked from emailing them, so I think
dumb
they know
question.
Who I am pretty well.
Sorry, dumb question.
You were trying to come there before the Pope arrived.
Well, tell the folks who don't know, Trish, about Tusla in a nutshell, this private company, because one of our listeners just sent a message that the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, Georgia, is actually a private company. It's not a government agency. So Big Pharma is behind all of these research facilities, disease control, and that. Tell us about Tusla and how it's connected to all this, what Tusla is.
Well, Tusla is a state-run institution. It originated, as far as I know, it started in Scotland. It's only known in Ireland since January 2014. The CEO at the time of in January 2014 was a Gordon Jayes. He was actually a former social worker in Scotland, where he got sacked for negligence and then became CEO of Tusla in Ireland. And in 2015, Mr. Fred McBride took over. Fred McBride had a dealing in a 24-month-old Brendan Muir case in Scotland, where the young fellow was being abused in his home. And Fred McBride never acted upon it. And the child ended up that the child died in hospital about 24 hours later. Tusla are actually coming in and taking kids illegally off parents in Ireland with no court papers or no warrants or anything. They came in on the 15th of August last year, and there was a secret courthouse held in Dolphin House in Dublin, where my three kids were removed by six members of Gardaí from Balbriggan Garda Station, as far as I know. But they had no warrants or paperwork or anything like that. They said they're using child neglect in a lot of cases in Ireland, whereas it's not actually child neglect. A lot of families might need a little bit of help or support, and that's what these people are supposed to be there for, but they're failing their duty of care to protect the children in Ireland. They're actually, Tusla, I know myself, are letting kids have contact, unsupervised access with actually people that has abused people. Right. And Tusla are very aware that this person is an abuser, and Tusla are still allowing the kids have unsupervised contact with him, despite the allegations after being made that he was an abuser. Now, that just proves that there's something to hide in this dirty, rotten right. system, because yeah. Once someone comes out and says that man abused someone, you don't have kids around them.
Right. Well, you know, Trish, also you were telling me, and other folks were telling me, that there's kind of a media ban too. You can't talk about Tusla. People mention in court there's a repercussion. What goes on with that?
In Ireland, they use an in-camera rule in the court, and it's only in the family law court, and that's where all the corruption is going on. But an in-camera rule is actually only a rule. It's not legality. It was made up by the Dáil, the Oireachtas in Ireland. Any journalist that is doing stories on family law cases are subjected to 3 years imprisonment and up to €50,000 fine for commenting on family law cases.
Wow. Censorship. So why do you think they have to censor it? Obviously to cover up stuff, but why else do you think?
Corrupt motherfuckers.
Yeah, well, they're all corrupt and they don't know. Like, I know Tusla has 75 different state-run institutions that actually sponsor them. There's six of them in London City. There's eight of them in Washington, D.C. There's 54 in Ireland. There's one in Paris in France, and I think there's three in Scotland. And these are all state-run institutions. These are all members of Gardaí between north and south of Ireland. These are the likes of Kuru. Kuru is a site that is supposed to take complaints and investigate into Tusla once you make a complaint. But Kuru is also one of the sponsors that sponsor them.
So it's really a multinational corporation that's got state support, and they get how much for every child that they grab, you know?
There's €10,000 per child, between 320 and 360 per child per week, and then they get bed allowance per week as well. They get then the rest of the money is divided with solicitors and guardian ad litem is a new one now. That's they're actually supposed to be independent, but they're not. They're all registered on the Kuru system as actual social workers.
Tell them which they gave you to look after your kids each week.
For a normal person in Ireland, you get €30 per week per child for a normal average mother or father. Once your kids are taken into state care under 12 years of age, they get €315 per week. And over 12 years of age, they get €352 per week.
So you're saying when a child is grabbed and put under state care, they're getting endowed 10 times the amount that a mom raising her natural born child gets?
Yes, Kevin, 100%.
Yeah. A foster carer does, yeah.
Shameful, Kevin.
Unbelievable.
And then Patricia gets to take her children out for a day. And she has to pay the money out when you're living on so much.
Yeah, living on €130 a week. I've been living on for nearly a year now.
And she has to pay all the expenses for her children. But yet the foster carers got €352
a week.
Yeah.
Well, you know, people have talked about the global agenda of the corporatocracy to destroy families. I can't think of a better example than what you're talking about.
Absolutely.
Yeah. My kids were never ever neglected or never hospitalized, never anything. Now, my daughter has been quite sick in the past 6 to 7 weeks. She's after losing a load of weight. She was taken off her epileptic medication. I believe it was a doctor in Temple Street Hospital that took her off her epileptic medication. And my daughter hasn't been well since. She's back taking vocal and absent seizures. And she's currently having tests done now at the minute in Crumlin. So we're just waiting for the results of that to come back. But again, they know that this child is sick for coming up to about 7 weeks. And the judge even stated himself the last time in court that he was quite worried about the child being so sick. She shouldn't be sick for so long.
No, we're at the bottom of the hour, and in the last half, I do want to talk about some of the things you guys have been doing in response, including the Common Law Assembly, the grand jury idea, and that kind of thing. So anything else on any of this you want to talk about, any of you, first?
Yeah, don't think so. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
Well, we're meeting every Saturday, Kevin, and we're studying common law.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in the next set. Pardon? We're going to talk about that in the next set.
Okay, say something.
Jump yeah. in, anybody.
Yeah. Kevin as well, just to let people know, does it like this is these aren't the only scandals that's going on in Ireland. You have the Magdalen Laundries here. That was the last Magdalen Laundries building is on Sean McDermott Street in Dublin.
Just up the road from
just up the road from where Mary is. And these are actually trying to sell the very last Magdalen Laundry building that there is. They're trying to sell it to actually put a hotel or something in. Donald Trump is coming over to Ireland also in November, which is costing about 20 million for him to come to Ireland, on top of 40 odd million a cost for the Pope to come to Ireland, which total it's about 65 million. Now that 65 million would have sorted out the homeless crisis for starters that we have in Ireland, because there's 10,000 plus homeless people, and that's not including couch surfers or anything like that. That's literally people in emergency accommodation and street people. And that a couple of million out of that would have sorted out our homeless crisis. You have the vulture funds who are coming in taking all our properties. And
you have private landlords that's sitting on empty vacant houses and vacant properties waiting for the property prices to go up so they can sell them all off.
Is that why that homeless, that occupation you mentioned, Jean, was that the issue in the occupation or what's going on?
It's actually to highlight the reason that we have a homeless situation. There's about 200,000 vacant properties in the whole of Ireland. There is actually 4 properties for each homeless person. And so like basically if these people what these people in the occupation want to do is put in compulsory purchase orders to these vacant properties so that they're opened up to families and homeless people. Dublin City Council has a compulsory purchase order sitting on their desk since 2014 that they have not acted on. So this occupation, what these people in this occupation want to do is highlight this situation and highlight the reasons why we actually have a homeless crisis.
Was it from a Irish court to the Dublin City Council?
It was actually something that the Dublin City Council voted on themselves.
And passed.
But so it's just sitting on the desk. They're refusing to act.
Why is it being stalled, do you think?
Because there's more money in homelessness than there is in actually building houses.
Mm. For the amount of money that it's costing them per homeless person to be put into these B&Bs on a long-term basis, it's costing them an awful lot more than what it would be to actually do up a house and put this homeless person into it.
Yep.
I think they actually spent something like 260 million last year to house people in bed and breakfasts and hotels.
Kevin, can I just say something to you?
Totally, yeah. Go ahead.
Right. This is an elitist thing. Ireland is one of the wealthiest islands in the world. We have gold, we have silver, we have thorium. We are one of the wealthiest islands in the world, and we're a tiny little island. They are out to annihilate us. Mm. They are out to make every one of us homeless and every one of us starving on the streets of Ireland.
Unless you're one of the circle.
Yeah.
If you're not in the golden circle, you're fucked.
There are a lot of billionaires coming to Ireland, not just the President of the United States, but a lot of other billionaires coming, I hear.
Our own Simon Coveney in our government is a member of the Bilderbergs.
He's also a landlord.
And he's a landlord.
And he's the ex-minister for housing.
Who's that? What's his name?
Simon Coveney.
All right. Well, yeah. Listen, Mary, you mentioned... Go ahead, Mary. I don't want to cut you off. Keep going.
The misery that the people in this country are suffering is beyond anything I ever could have imagined would happen to me in my lifetime.
We even have walking homeless. We have people that go out to work for a living and they cannot afford to keep a roof over their heads.
We have Ó Gearta Síochána corners sleeping in their cars because they can't go home and get back to work the next day.
Yeah.
I don't know. To have a lot of people living in poverty in Ireland for many years, Kevin, and a lot of people are hungry and everything else, but...
Yeah.
No one in Ireland should be hungry because now Ireland is a natural resource in itself and there's enough in Ireland to feed everyone that's in Ireland. But they're selling off all our fishery and everything and they're selling it all out into the EU for the Irish to buy it back off the EU so they're making more money.
Well, you know, it really reminds me of what I see on Indian reservations in Canada, places that traditionally been targeted for genocide and exactly. Our people in Ireland were, right, and are. They use them as experimental centers. Let's see how much we can get away with.
Do you know when this all started, Kevin?
Pardon me?
Do you know when this all started?
When?
When the British came into Ireland and stole all our food. Back in
the
day.
1189. Yep, the invasion of England, yep.
They came in, they sent regiments into every county, and the people actually believed all we had was spuds and potatoes.
Yeah.
We had geese, we had chickens, we had fish, we had cows, we had every motherfucking piece of shit that you could talk about to eat.
Yep.
But they sent regiments in and they stole all our food.
In conjunction with the Catholic Church.
Absolutely.
In their, like,
100%.
Dirty sock.
Yeah,
100%. Well, I know. Well, listen, Mary, you mentioned a little while ago you're studying the common law. Do you want to share with the listeners what you're studying?
Well, we're basically studying your books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Talk about
it. We do a section of your book every week. And then we cover
universal law. We cover tort law, malicious law. We cover statute law, statute and acts, common law, EU fundamental charter, the Human Convention of Human Rights. Right. And the EU Charter and the European Charter for Human Rights actually backs up the common law as well as our 1919 sovereign constitution. But what a lot of people aren't aware of in Ireland, when they are actually voting to repeal an act or amend an act in the constitution, they're not actually voting to repeal or amend an act in the 1919 constitution because that cannot be repealed because there was an all 32 county general election held in 1918 which ratified the 1919 sovereign constitution. And it was when Eamon de Valera and his cronies crept in and came in with the 1922 and 1937 Irish Free State. People don't actually realise it's the 1937 Irish Free State that they're repealing and amending, which actually isn't even for the Irish people. It's the common law basis that we're in. We're in a common law jurisdiction. So every week we have our own group that meets up and have our own meetings, and then we have groups where other groups will come in and learn about common law and pass different ideas across to each other and how we're going to work it and what way we're going to do it and different things.
Right.
And
another thing we've also found out, Kevin, is with our constitution, to change anything in it, they're supposed to put it to the people as a referendum. We've discovered things in the constitution that have actually been changed without referendum.
Like what?
What was that thing that John was telling us the other day? They actually changed wordings.
Article 40.
Yeah.
Article 40 through 44 of the Irish Constitution, I think. And the wording of it was actually worded differently. And that was never
was never put to a referendum.
That was never put to a referendum.
One thing John was telling me that was that when De Valera changed the constitution, he institutionalized the power of the Roman Catholic Church. He made a deal with Rome for sure.
Yeah.
And you're living under the consequence of that.
Yes.
Yep. And but tell us, though, I mean, go ahead, sorry.
And sorry, a lot of the money, I think, is actually coming from the Vatican, London City, and Washington, D.C., which are actually three sovereign states inside a sovereign state, and Ireland being the fourth. So the four of them are connected to each other.
Right.
Well, we've also discovered with our state, they don't class the citizens as citizens anymore. They class us as customers. We are customers of the state.
Well, it's a corporatocracy. Everybody's going to work for the one big corporation eventually.
Yeah.
Well, listen.
So basically, our government are the citizens, and we are their customers.
Right. No inherent rights.
No.
Right. No, but Kevin, it says in Article 1 of our Constitution, the very first article, the Irish nation hereby affirms its inalienable, indefeasible, and sovereign right to choose its own form of government, to determine its relations with other nations, and to develop a life, political, economic, and cultural, in accordance with its own genius and traditions. Well, why is that not happening?
Well, you know why. You've lost power. And when you guys chartered, I want to mention this to the listeners. It's very important. All over the world, our tribunal is setting up these chartered common law assemblies where 12 or more men and women come together. They form a charter. They're a governing body. And that common law assembly can then establish common law courts, common law sheriffs to make the arrests, that kind of thing.
Yep.
So talk about, as a chartered organization, you guys can now start creating. You're not looking to the old system. You're creating something new. Let's talk a little bit about that in the last 15 minutes.
Well, Kevin, Article 2 says it is the entitlement and birthright of every person born on the island of Ireland, which includes its island and seas, be part of the Irish nation. That is also the entitlement of all persons otherwise qualified in accordance with law. So if we haven't broken the law, or we haven't murdered or stole from anyone, we're all citizens of Ireland. Furthermore, the Irish nation cherishes its special affinity with people of Irish ancestry living abroad who shares its cultural identity and heritage. Why the fuck are we not getting support from our people abroad?
Well, you know, I think you know the answer to that. But I mean, when we're talking about this big illusion people had that you got to work through the system, you got to, in your experience, is going through the courts of this existing system working at all for any of you?
No,
absolutely not.
The Irish government is a pure and utter failure, and it has been for coming up to 100 years in Ireland.
Years, yeah.
It's a pure and utter failure that doesn't take the duty of care to the Irish citizens on board at all. The statutes and acts were implemented to actually keep the Irish government in check, and the Irish government thought then that they would turn it around and use the statutes and acts against the people instead of for themselves.
And they don't go through due process either.
Well, you know, there's a historical precedent in your country. During the Civil War, before the first shot was fired, the rebels began to set up their own courts. They got people to leave the crown courts, and they set up their own courts. The Republican forces started operating these courts in the countryside and everything. Yep. Sounds like we've got to do that all over again.
Yeah.
But that was legal and lawful back then, Kevin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what's your experience in trying this? Like, are you getting a response? Tell us a little bit about your efforts, you know, to get people rallied around the common law and its courts.
Oh. Yeah, there is a big response. There is other groups from different parts of Ireland that's after making contact, and
we had a very good rally there last week. It was a 2-day rally, and we had a very, very good response. I think there must have been about 20 or 30 people in the room over the weekend.
Yeah. Good.
And they're all very interested in coming on board as well. So, yeah, it is growing.
That's good. If you guys had to form a court tomorrow, let's say call a court case, what would it be about? What needs action the most? What do you think you can act on?
This would be about the rape of our children in Ireland and the stolen babies. Because we have a woman sitting here beside us right now that she has 3 stolen babies. Yeah. They just nipped in when she left with a babysitter, took them without an arrest warrant. After a year, court cases, there's no book of evidence against her.
Left her with no paperwork.
What the fuck, like?
She didn't even know where her children were after they took them.
Yeah, and now I'm in court on the 21st of September because Laois County Council, our very own Miss Fionnuala Daly, who is a registered social worker on Cooroo and also acting as my housing officer, which is a straight conflict of interest, has been well aware of my case and well aware of all the repairs and stuff that needed doing in my house. And they also failed to do anything. And on the 21st of September, they're going for a repossession order and trying to make me homeless.
This is the second time, even though the last time they realised she had actually overpaid by €200. Now they are coming in looking for eviction notice again.
So you're going back to court, Trish? You've got a subpoena?
Yeah, 21st of September, they want me in court for a repossession order. If I don't go to court, the court case is going to be heard anyway.
Right.
So,
but yeah, Kevin, she owes no money.
Which proves to us that the state agencies are all working together.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure.
And it's illegal to bring third parties into a case. Mm-hmm. But they're doing it anyway.
And the last time under the Freedom of Information Act, she requested her files, they were all redacted.
Well, you know, I think, you know, Trish, you mentioned you got a good social worker finally and who's sympathetic. And it was interesting in the news when former President Mary McAleese actually came out and said that the Catholic Church had approached her to try to get government support for a cover-up of these crimes at Choom and other places.
Absolutely, yeah.
So it sounds like people in the system maybe are responding a little bit. What do you think? Is McAleese somebody who has told more of this or what?
Oh, she's wide awake. Yeah, I have her program recorded. I would actually need to go back over it and listen to it, Kevin. Maybe we could come on another show and discuss that.
Oh, yeah, we can. Yep, sure.
To be fair, Kevin, I think the babies at Choom is actually only the... It's only the top of the barrel. There's a lot more. There's a lot more there to come out. There's a lot more mother and baby homes that were around, and Choom babies are only the tip of the iceberg, and it will come out eventually.
There were 796 of them little babies that were threw into a septic tank, and there was a protest there when the Pope was in Ireland, and there was 2 women of Choom that actually sealed off the place and made it into a crime scene and said that they wanted investigations put into it. Again, the Irish government should be absolutely ashamed of themselves that them 796 babies are still in an epoxy septic tank in the middle of Choom. We demand that the Irish government give these 796 babies a decent burial in which they deserve. And instead of having that pox bottle of a yolk that they have in the middle of Temple Bar at
which
Choom
they
Baby
covered
Memorial
up the
site,
week that the Pope was coming.
Yeah.
This is a memorial to the, just so the listeners know, this is a memorial to the with the names of all the dead babies in Temple Bar in Dublin. Yeah.
They covered it up the week that the Pope was coming. A guy called Manix Flynn, who's a councillor in Dublin City, actually built this memorial. And his excuse was, we wanted to protect it from building work that's going on around the area. Considering that this memorial had already been burnt, there was graffiti on it. But all of a sudden, when the Pope arrives, he wants to protect it.
Well, you know, I don't understand how one person would show up to see this murderer, Jorge Bergoglio, who trafficked children and killed them in Argentina.
Yeah.
Why the institution that put those 800 babies in a cistern, why anyone would show up? Like, what is going on in people's heads, do you think?
I think a lot of people just showed up for the circus, Kevin.
Yeah. Like, there was, in 1979, when Pope John Paul came over, there was 2.1 million people turned up to the Phoenix Park. In 2018, there was 100,000 at the most.
Well, I hear there were, like, there were Pope dolls for sale and balloons, and it's like a real commercial carnival.
25 euro for a Pope doll. 25 euro.
They even made lollipops for children with the Pope's head stuck onto the front of a boxy lollipop. Now that should tell you now how much the Vatican likes to mess with our children in Ireland.
Oh, my God.
Imagine paying €1.50 for your child to suck a lollipop of a Pope, like,
with a Pope's head on it.
You couldn't make it up.
I think they should have had Pope on a rope dolls instead.
Kevin, a voodoo doll.
Right. Good idea, Mary. You should market that. Be a popular item.
We might actually start going into manufacturing our courses then on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Right. Good idea. Holy shit. Well, look.
Unfortunately, the Pope is kind of baldy, so it'd be very hard to get any of his hair.
Yeah. And if you actually look up the pictures from the Pope in Knock, and you look pictures of the Pope in Phoenix Park, we were just looking at him before the radio show this evening, and you can tell straight away that it is the Pope and an impersonator, 100%. Yeah. One fellow.
Well, we know for a fact he had a double in Dublin, at least at the Mass, and he's getting brought before the carpet by the other cardinals. They're probably going to try to boot him out, at least one faction. So this is all, all the work we do, guys, this is all having an impact. So that's why I especially wanted you on today to share all that.
Yeah.
Well, tell me, we got about, 6 minutes left here. I want you to kind of point out some of the things that are pointing to the future. What are the things you're working on? I know you and John and the others are talking about an actual grand jury in Ireland to investigate this stuff. Do you want to talk about any of that in the last 5 minutes?
Yeah, we want to get grand jury set up in Ireland, and we want to open up our own common law courts and our own common law office over here somewhere. And in the next few weeks, we're going to be going around. We're going to be standing outside the likes of the CCJ and the Four Courts Ireland, and we're going to be handing out some leaflets about common law and explaining to people actually going into the courts what their rights are, and see can we get more people on board that way to try and make some kind of change on a common law basis in Ireland.
It has been a slow process, Kevin, because we want to do it properly and we want to do it right. And to do it right, you have to actually learn both about the civil courts and about the common law courts and the difference and the similarities. And that's what we've been doing now for the last couple of months. We've been studying up. Now I think we're kind of there. And now we can go to other people and tell them what we've learned.
Excellent.
Yep. Hear, hear.
Well, I should mention to you, I think I mentioned this before, but on Samhain, the Celtic New Year, October 31st, there's groups from around Europe who want to come to the Hill of Tara and hold a gathering there, an international gathering about all of these crimes. And the next Sunday, I believe it's November 4th, there's going to be actions at Catholic churches all over the world, occupations, arrests of child trafficking priests, all of that. Sunday, November 4th. So that's something to mark in your calendar. There will be actions all over the world in our network on that Sunday.
Yeah.
Send us some information, Kevin. It's something that we'd like to get involved in as well, I'm sure.
Well, I know you will be. Any final words for the listeners, for any of you?
Yeah, fuck the motherfucker.
Well, as a matter of fact, Mary, I'm playing your favorite song at the end of the show.
Yes!
It's the Pope song. We're going to be playing it in just a few minutes.
Did you like the one I sent you about living in the Vatican?
Yeah, we're going to play that too some week. Trish, any final words about anything?
No, just if anyone that's looking to get involved, or if there's any groups that's listening that has common law, if they want to try and make contact with us and have a meeting with us and see can we all come together as one and form some kind of a grand jury and some kind of a common law court in Ireland, I think that if we had more heads together that's all fighting for the one thing, that the easier it might be for us to actually get what we want.
Or if there's anybody out there in other countries that have actually done this, if they want to get in touch with us and let us know how they've gone about it and how it's gone with them, we'd be more than welcome to take their information on board and use it.
Okay, and I'll say to the listeners, if you want to get a hold of the Irish folks, you can write through the ITCCS Central Office, ITCCSoffice@gmail.com. Guys, I really thank you for being with us again today. We'll have you back on real soon. Godspeed and strength to all of you. Love you all.
Thanks,
Kevin.
Love
you all. It's
been a pleasure.
Okay, talk to you soon.
Okay, night.
Now, before we get on to Mary's favorite song, and one of mine, actually, I should mention the next week we're going to be having updates about how this whole struggle is manifesting in Canada. Last week, there was an attempted arrest and a public banning order issued against Anglican Bishop Mark MacDonald in Toronto, who's an inside member of the Ninth Circle, directly implicated in child trafficking and the deaths of children. Part of that is on our website, itccs.org. You can follow that. Also, during the month of October, organizers with the Republic of Canada, which has declared independence from the British Crown and the papacy and these other genocidal institutions, we will be holding events across Canada to rally people around the same kind of chartered common law assemblies that the Mary Jean and Trish were just talking about in Canada, in Kanata, the Republic of Kanata, that was declared actually in 2015 under common law. So if you want more information about that, you can write to the main email here at the station, thecommonland@gmail.com. We'll get you connected with your local organizer. That's thecommonland@gmail.com. Also, a lot of the ideas that they were talking about today can be found in our manual, the Common Law Training Manual. Put in my name, Kevin Annett, A-N-N-E-T-T, at the Amazon.com website. It'll come up. You can also write thecommonland@gmail.com. We'll send you out copies. That and my other books, which are all listed there at Amazon. Finally, the people have been asking about where things stand with future programs. We need your help. I could use with a lot of help with the show. If any of you would like to co-host various programs, please write to us. You will be put on board. You will become an active member of this, because this radio show is really a platform for people who have moved from words to action. And that's the whole point of this catalyst, is to get you on board to do that. So please write to us and think of some shows. We'll produce them. Finally, let me just thank all of you folks who were such a support over the last month, and especially for the people out on the West Coast who are struggling very hard to document the missing Aboriginal families, not just individual Native women, as the government's portraying it, but the Aboriginal families that are going missing en masse. That work of you has already forced some exposure. There was an item in the CTV News last week that a mass grave of children has been found at near the Brandon Indian Residential School. Of course, they did the usual cover-up about it and spin operation, but it shows that our pressure forces the system to start to confess things and admit things. We have to keep the pressure on. It's the same cause, the same cover-up of these crimes, and yet a crisis engendered the more we expose it because of the connections that are made by our exposure to the Ninth Circle and these other insidious forces behind these crimes. So, in other words, folks, we have to keep pushing. We have to exploit the crisis in these institutions. It's up to each one of us. So until next week, thank you. We're going to end on this very interesting and lively song called The Pope's Song by Tim Minchin. Hope you enjoy it. Be back here next week. Until then, stay strong, stay clear. Thank you, brothers and sisters.
All right, this is the last thing you're going to hear tonight. It's a happy song, but it's complicated words, so just listen really hard. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, he's a fucking motherfucker. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, he's a total motherfucker. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucker, fuck him, fuck the motherfucker. Fuck the motherfucker, fuck the motherfucking Pope. Fuck the motherfucker and fuck you, motherfucker, if you think that motherfucker is sacred. If you cover for another motherfucker who's a kiddie fucker, fuck you, you're no better than the motherfucking rapist. And if you don't like the swearing this motherfucker forced from me and reckon it shows moral or intellectual paucity, then fuck you, motherfucker. This is language one employs when one is fucking pissed at motherfuckers' fucking boys. I don't give a fuck if calling the Pope a motherfucker means you unthinkingly brand me an unthinking apostate. This has now to do with other fucking godly motherfuckers. I'm not interested right now in theological debate. There are other fucking songs and there are other fucking ways. I'll be a religious apologist on other fucking days. But the fact remains, if you protect a single kitty fucker, then Pope or Prince or Plumber, you're a fucking motherfucker. And I don't give a fuck what any other motherfucker believes about Jesus and his motherfucking mother. I've no problem with the spiritual beliefs of other fuckers, while those beliefs don't impact on the happiness of others. But if you build your church on claims of fucking moral authority and with threats of hell impose it on others in society, then you, you motherfucker, can expect some fucking wrath when it turns out you've been fucking us in our motherfucking asses. So fuck the motherfucker and fuck you, motherfucker, if you're still a motherfucking papist. If he covered for a single motherfucker who's a kiddie fucker, fuck him, he's as evil as the motherfucking rapist. And if you look into your motherfucking heart and tell me true, if this motherfucking stupid fucking song offended you with its filthy fucking language and its fucking disrespect, if it made you feel angry, go ahead and write a letter. But if you find me more offensive than the possibility the Pope protected priests when they were getting fucking fiddly, then listen to me, motherfucker, this here is a fact. You are just as morally misguided as that motherfucking power-hungry, self-aggrandized bigot in the stupid fucking hat.